Hi, I'm Christina Crowley-Arkley. I'm a Canadian dairy farmer's daughter, strategic marketing and communications entrepreneur, and your host for Country Guides podcast series. With renewed focus on your farm, your conversation, I sat down with farmers across Canada to talk about their stories of success and failure, what keeps them going every day, and how they're positioning themselves and their farm for generations to come. All right, let's get into it.
Well, thanks so much, April, for joining us here today. Really excited for this conversation.
Great to be here.
You are a person who wears many different hats, and that's what's going to make, I think, today's chat really interesting, because you have dairy farmer from Quebec, woman dairy farmer, which is something we don't get to see very often in Canadian dairy, but that is something that we're seeing at least change. You obviously own your own business, you sell seed, mother, and you are the associate editor of Country Guide. So I feel like there's going to be a lot to chat about, especially we have worked together previously in the past, so have experience in that too. You're a very dedicated board member and volunteer in your community. So let's start with your dairy journey and how you ended up in Quebec as a dairy farmer.
So my family came over from Scotland in 1831. I was just joking with someone earlier that I was surprised after they were subject to the first winter that they hung around, didn't take off for somewhere warmer. So I'm sixth generation and hoping that my daughter will be the seventh. I have family members that I farm with as well. So my brother and my dad, and my husband has his own farm as well. So we're busy, busy, busy farming all the time.
And so how many cows do you milk? How many acres do you crop? Like what's give us the full story.
So we have 200 acres. Pretty much all of that is used for feeding our animals. We milk 40.
Yeah.
And have about 70 head altogether. And I guess, 40 is kind of bordering on small at this point, but that's the stage we're at. We're considering the strategic build now, the planning into the future, particularly because of certain pro-action elements that are coming into play. So we have to start planning 5 and 10 years out.
Yeah. And I was going to say, you and I can relate because I come from a dairy farming background as well. And so take me through a bit of that strategic planning process that you think you're going through. I mean, because I feel like you're living through what a lot of our dairy farmers are in Canada. The average cow size now, I know in Ontario's examples, I think 80 to 100 cows. So you are one of those people who is at that critical stage where you're deciding about the future to make sure that, if the seventh generation is going to proceed with your daughter, that you've set her up for success. And so take us through a bit of the questions that you're asking yourself with your husband, where you're considering going. Like, have the conversation that you're having with yourself inside mentally or having behind closed doors out here with me in the podcast.
Yeah. And I mean, there is a lot of things that goes through everybody's head individually, and not everybody is always on the same page. You kind of feel like maybe you are because you're working every day together and you're like, yeah, we're doing this. And, we work as a team and we have our own particular hand signals that, no other farm would be able to know, but we know what it means. But when you start digging into it, everybody kind of has different ideas of maybe where they want it to go. Of course, everybody has different personalities. Some people are more like day-to-day working. Some people are more long-term, strategic, or maybe creative, visionary kind of thinking. So really, and then we're very much at the early stages right now. So it's a lot of getting into those conversations, I guess. But at the same time, considering all the external factors that are coming into play. So, what's quota doing? What's pro-action doing? In Quebec, we have particularly stringent environmental plans and rules and regulations to follow, which is not always a bad thing. I mean, if we want to be sustainable and have the industry survive, that's our bread and butter is there. It's the earth. It's the animals. So everything has to be taken care of properly.
Well, and what is the price of quota in Quebec?
I want to say 24,000 per kilo, I think, is what we're at.
So it's capped, like Ontario and the P5.
For so long, that's it. So I don't even look at it anymore. Just kind of assume it's enough, right?
Because obviously, as a dairy farmer with cash crops that supports the farm, I mean, one of the biggest implications of the decisions that you make, it's financial, right? That you have to be able to sustain the long-term plans and pay for, whether it's a barn retrofit or a new build. Yeah. I mean, there's some serious investment and capital costs when you're building a dairy farm.
And we always joke about that too, because, there's that expression of, well, don't be so Scotch. So, but that's how we think sometimes. Like we're not spendy, we'll think about it very carefully.
Yeah.
If there is something that can be retrofitted, we'll do that, it would be nice to go out and spend, millions of dollars
to build a new barn,
the best and whatever. Yeah. I mean, just being at the farm show here today is a lot. There's a lot of fancy stuff out there.
Yeah.
But realistically, for each farm, I think you have to kind of not always compare yourself to the Joneses.
Yeah.
What will work in your situation and assess it logically and critically and strategically. Yeah. And I don't want to overplay that word, but yeah.
Because, I mean, you're one of those people that is in the situation a lot of other Canadian dairy farmers are, where if you've been doing this as a sixth generation farm, you obviously want to upkeep the farm and stay there. It's a way of life for your for your kids and your family. Yeah. But there are implications for, you know, dairy farming and the costs associated with it. And, you know, you want to make money.
Yeah.
And that's a big, I mean, at the end of the day, you have to sustain your family and what it costs
it's
to
nice
farm.
To say that, this is our way of life and we love it and we do it because we love it. But, you know, so does a doctor or, you know, a mechanic or whoever. Like, they do it because they like it and you've got to go into work every day. So that's a big part of it.
But
definitely have to, it has to support your family. It has to be sustainable again into the long run. If, as I said before, we want, you know, my nephew or my daughter to be the next generation, you have to think well ahead. I laugh because I think about like the Downton Abbey. How they were like planning always, like, we don't own it. We're just here and we're the caretakers at the moment, you know? And that's kind of what I feel like.
Do you know, along the way, before you took over the farm or as you were taking over the farm, did you get any advice from someone? Again, it can be good advice or bad advice that you look back now that you're like, that was, glad I didn't follow that advice. Or, you know, I'm really glad I took that advice. Because again, you were probably in a very precarious situation where you had to decide to take on a fate that, you know, some people don't have that type of courage to take on. It's a lot.
And it's interesting that you said the word courage, because I think that kind of, that's the one that sticks out to me. I mean, I talk to so many people. I've written for Country Guide for 5-6 years and now being associate editor. There's so much advice. That's kind of the point of our magazine, is offering that advice so that you guys can make all those critical decisions on farm in your situation. So I can't say that there's one piece in particular other than, just like, you can't be courageous and brave every day, but you can take little steps all the time to build up, to get to where you want to go.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of like, maybe sounds kind of cliche, but, you know, keep your mind on the long goal and just take those little steps every day. Some days will be, you know, not a great day. On those days, I go onto Twitter and I see what everybody else is doing and they're like, oh, tractor got stuck today. How's your day going?
Or, yeah.
Oh, this broke today. Or, you know, and then it makes me feel better that, okay, it's not only us, because it is not only you.
Yeah. And, you know, you bring up a good point, because I feel like the farming industry, it's a day-to-day endeavor. Like, you have to get up and do the same chores, repetition, the same routine. But yet you mentioned the word, you know, strategic vision of and that's something that maybe our sector, that we don't realize that we have to kind of play both those roles.
Yes.
That you have to get up and do the hard work every day. Yeah. But then you also have to be strategically thinking long term of where you go.
Yeah, there's a lot of the same, particularly in dairy, because you are getting up, you've got your animals, you have to feed them, you have to take care of all those little babies, all those little toddlers.
yeah.
But at the same time, every day is not different, because, oh, look, this broke today, or, hey, that was a great day, or there was a calf born today.
Yeah.
So it really is hard sometimes to juggle that sameness, that things, those wrenches that get thrown in your plan. And then on top of that, to also think about into the future.
Yeah.
So
do you guys do, you know, as an example, like, I know, I'm thinking from a corporate business standpoint, they do like an annual, you know, type of strategic planning session or retreat or review type thing. Do you and your husband or anyone who works on your farm, do you guys have that type of annual checkup where you think, you know, this is how we're doing, this is where, and I know a lot of farmers use like tax season as an example to be like, oh, how was last year?
Yeah.
But it's a different type of mindset when you're doing taxes and finances than when you're strategic planning and visioning for the future.
Yeah.
Do you do that?
I think you have to kind of look at things throughout the year, you know, maybe set a time in your head that okay, it's, you know, the 31st of each month, or maybe it's every quarter. I like benchmarking, not necessarily against other people in other farms, or, again, you know, not trying to keep up with the Joneses, but benchmarking against ourselves. Last year we did this, then we started this process, or we brought this piece of machine or this piece of, you know, intelligence in, or whatever. Or we brought this best advice in from somebody else, and that led to this happening. So this from last year, and then looking forward, okay, how can we take that again and next year maybe make it a little bit, you know, a little bit better?
Yeah.
One other thing that always stuck out at me was, I read somewhere once, Air Canada, I believe it was, they were trying to save money, right?
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
So they had removed one olive from every meal that they were serving and managed to save like hundreds of thousands of dollars. So I think about the people who are always looking at this giant picture of, I need to buy this big piece of expensive something to be able to save this or to make more of that. But sometimes it's not adding to something. Sometimes it's subtracting.
Yes,
you could
good
also
point.
Get similar results.
Yeah,
maybe
love that
it's
advice.
A bit slower, but you will, you know,
yeah, see it compound over time.
Sure.
Yeah. And so, in terms of like, how do you balance all that you do with running a dairy farm and then being an associate editor of Country Guide and selling seed? I mean, how do you manage all that? Any of your business too? So, and by all means, tell the listener what your business is. I mean, you've been doing it for a number of years. So.
Yeah. So it's Alba PR. And it's the big picture, as I'm trying to translate in my head from the profession in French, is agricultural marketing and communication. So that takes in a lot of different things. We also offer translation services, English to French, French to English, for agricultural services.
Yeah.
And then within that, I launched, maybe about 10 years ago, my Farmer Survival Guide. So how to communicate with 21st century consumers. That kind of approaches everything from a psychological aspect, which kind of sounds a bit heavy and scary maybe, but it's really just kind of boiled down to how do our brains work? How are we thinking? How are we receiving that information? And then once you know that, well, everybody's brain functions in the same way. Mm-hmm. So once you have that information, then you can go back and make sure that your messages are tailored specifically to this is how people prefer to receive that type of information. So it comes back to, okay, how should a farmer and a consumer be having conversations that will be beneficial to both people, and happy conversations.
Yeah.
Not everyone's.
Yeah, because we do seem to that it is something. About, I mean, I feel like you and I could do a whole other podcast about communicating and building public trust and that whole conversation that I know our sector's having about where and the implications of where that's going to take us down the road, our relationship with the consumers and communicating. So, so back to the question of like, how do you balance all that then? Like, how do you balance Alba PR with selling seed, with Country Guide, and your dairy farming? Like, what is your, how do you, what does your day look like?
Well, I'm not going to pretend that it's easy, or I'm not going to, you know, pat myself on the back and like, look at me, I'm superwoman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most days are hard and most days are really busy.
Yeah.
It's, and I don't want to come back to that. Oh, you do it all because you love it, because that kind of sets up false expectations sometimes, you know, like making yourself do it today because, oh, look, I didn't make any money, but I love it.
Yeah. It's almost like the overuse of the word pat. You, if you're passionate about it, you, but bills need to be paid.
Right.
And, and we do love to work if we know that we're being profitable and that it can sustain other areas of our life that we're pursuing that way of life. Like,
exactly.
It all bounces out. Yeah.
So it's I've learned the hard way over the years how to prioritize.
Yeah.
And some things that you really want to prioritize is unfortunately that day you can't. But I do always make my family and my daughter number one.
Number one. Yeah. Yeah.
Everything else can wait.
Yeah. Profit second. But yeah.
Yeah. So it really is just trying to manage and to prioritize, but really doing it because I feel we're going to come back to that P word again.
Yeah.
Passionate about all of it.
Yeah.
I really just want to help people have great conversations, whether that's through my Country Guide position, whether that's through Farmer Survival Guide.
And can you think back to an experience again? I always think of like, there's got to be something in, whether it's childhood or, you know, in your teenage years, that drove you to that moment where you kind of the light went off in your head and you're like, I'm realizing that this is why I want to do this, or I, you know, there's a reason behind the passion.
Right.
Do you remember or recall that instance where you
had
a moment?
Yeah. Okay. For farming, it's been literally as long as I can remember, like about the age of five.
Yeah.
it's never been, you know, a question of not doing it. In my grade 6 yearbook and in my grade 11 yearbook, it was, you know, my probable destiny farmer because
no
I
way.
Wanted, you know,
yeah. It's amazing.
But for the communications part, it was probably about 20 years ago. We had a bit of a situation in our community, a very small community of 400 people. So where a pig farm came into the community or was coming into the community.
Yeah.
And it was at a time where there was some pig farms more north of Quebec that were kind of getting in trouble, we'll say, for not respecting certain environmental regulations.
Mm. Yeah.
So the non-farmers in our community were alarmed, as were actually some of the farmers, you know. But unfortunately, it divided our community because it forced farmers to have to pick the side of the pig farm coming in. Because if rules and regulations were going to come in against that farm, it would affect us and our livelihood. So it put a huge, deep divide. People didn't know how to have a conversation. Any conversations that were happening were very siloed. It was a horrible, horrible time. And it was very much that light bulb moment for me where I was like, no, this could be better. People can sit down and have conversations. It happens. You know, there's people who do this for a living, they're, you know, negotiators or, you know, like
different forms of communicators.
So that's where it came in. And then I just, I went back to university. I'd already went to McDonald College for farming. And then I just went back and I did my public relations and my psychology and
That experience was clearly impressionable because it made you realize that, like, I want to use my skill set to be able to help the next situation that we're in.
And I could meld the love of farming and advocacy.
Advocacy.
And writing and communicating.
Which clearly then that makes sense as to why a natural position like an associate editor with Country Guide seems like such a natural fit, considering even the tagline of the magazine is your farms, your conversations. And that's you bring up a really great point that every day the farming community is having conversations, whether it's with their partners, with the people on the farm, with their, you know, their children if they're farming with them. And those conversations, whether it's about business or about life, that's how you end up farming.
Outside conversations, you know, because sometimes it's not even just talking to the farmer next door for ideas, it's talking to all these adjacent industries, you know, like taking something from space science, maybe, you know, that you read this cool article and you're like, hey, that's like a really interesting idea. How can I apply that in my farm situation? So bringing in all the conversations and all the ideas and then just hoping that people can take like a little nugget and kind of say, how can I modify that to fit my situation?
Who are the people that you lean on to talk to about farm conversations? I mean, when you're thinking so you're talking about at the beginning, we were talking about your strategic vision of where your farm's going to go one day. I mean, who are the people that you talk to besides your, maybe your partner or your husband daily about farm life, farm
Anybody, decisions, everybody. I talk farming all day with
anybody. Do you have a certain set of people that you call if you got to make a decision and you need some advice?
Probably mostly my dad.
Okay.
Outside of that, I mean, you have your, and my dad is also my my editor.
Okay.
Before I send things in, I'm like, your dad, read this. Is it good?
So he has that communications lens too that clearly you have.
And outside of that, it really is just finding the right people. The right experts. You know, sometimes you might have to go through a few and you know, you have to dive personally too, you know, but we've got some great accountants in our area. We've got, you know, resources like FCC, and then we've got our Quebec version, provincial version of that. There's some really, really intelligent people out there who like love helping people do what they do best. So like use them. You know, optimize that, pull them in, talk to them. Some of them are sitting there at their desks all day, like literally just call them up or shoot them an email. And, you know,
what advice would you give to a young farmer who's getting, whether it's a dairy farmer, a pig farmer, a cash cropper, who's just, you know, invested a bunch in land to kind of make their dream come true? What would you tell them in terms of advice for who to turn to if they don't have those people, if they don't have a dad that they can talk to or a parent, if they're maybe doing this on their own, they're starting out from scratch? Like, how do they go find those people? Yeah. Do they just go on Twitter and they just try to search something? Do they Google something? Like, where do you go?
And honestly, like Twitter or, you know, Facebook or whatever you're comfortable with, I've had so many good contacts there. Just throw out a question. Like
on social media,
throw it out on social media, and people love to give their
advice, free advice.
And I've made some really awesome connections there and gotten some really great ideas. Even sometimes when you're just scrolling through and you see somebody's doing something, if you don't have a network and you're not sure where to start, that's a case where I would say social media can do good. You know, there is a good side to it.
I think that's maybe how you and I even met originally connected. You know what I mean? Before we did our board work together, but it's an incredible tool. And I mean, I guess that's where you're bringing up a really good point about that our sector's so based on connection and people and relationships and having that network. That your network is your net worth, really. Like if you can.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm at the farm show here for 2 days and I've met a couple of people who, and I'm 7 hours from home. And there are two people that I had conversations with. They were like, oh, yeah, I know so-and-so who lives in the town next to you. You know, like so small and so connected. So use that, leverage that, like just start talking to people and people will dump advice on you. You don't have to take it all. You know, be cherry pick, like pick selective. Out what's good. Be selective about it. But take it all in. Yeah. The sponge.
Yeah. And do you find too, I mean, again, because you're very involved in your community, you volunteer, you give of your time and energy. What advice do you have to people, especially young people now? Because I think time is a commodity, right? It's our most precious commodity as human beings. Yeah. And we're being very selective of that yes. time. And so what advice would you give to young people now about getting involved in your community, you know, volunteering, balancing maybe a second job, yeah. second income while you're supporting your farm life? How do they choose what to do, what to pursue, what to say no to? What advice do you have?
Yeah, I struggled with that because I was very much a yes, I'll help and yes, I'll do when I want to. I want to help. I want to be a helper.
Yeah.
But it will burn you out. And you do have to, again, go back to my point of being selective and prioritizing. So, you know, pick one or two things that are, you know, maybe there's a win-win to it. You know, maybe there's an organization that you can make some great contacts and network with, but at the same time, you're giving back to that organization or to the community. So kind of set up some parameters.
Yeah.
But definitely, I would say, you know, if you have time, pick one thing and, you know, do 1 hour or something a week.
Yeah.
Because it'll pay off. It'll pay off with conversations and knowledge and advice and contacts.
Yeah, that network that we talked about. Yeah. I mean, what excites you most for the future of agriculture? Because you have a varied lens perspective, right. diverse perspective on what you could be wearing this hat as a farmer and be excited for this, but then be wearing your country guide hat and be excited for this.
Yeah.
So I guess the general question of what excites you about our sector moving forward?
Well, I think there's so much. There's going to be so much, not just in terms of technology, but all of it kind of combined, I guess, with like there's so many older farmers who are retiring. It's a huge, you know, percentage of the population in general.
Yeah.
But so also in agriculture and all those young people coming up, we're having more diverse knowledge being added to the pool too, because it's not just, you know, diversity of different types of people coming to Canada and all their ideas, but having women's voices more in there. So I think the future will be fantastic. I don't usually feel pessimistic about the future of agriculture at all. I know there's certain places or people that you talk to and they are, but you know, then I read little snippets in our local paper that goes back 150 years and 75 years ago, and often they put a little blurb in about, you know, something farm related. But it's always like that. It's always, there's always some, well, things look down and the markets are this, and that's what it is. That's what it is. It's business is business. Some days it's good, some days it's bad. But if you keep finding the best knowledge, the best networks, the best advice, the best, you know, just take it all in and do the best that you can do with it in your situation. Yeah, I think we're going places.
As I say, the way I look at it too, it's like Twitter or X, formerly known as Twitter.
Yes. Yeah.
I really love my time, my feed, my timeline. Yes. There's a lot of really great people because that's what I've cultivated. I follow people from outside of agriculture, within agriculture and food, to try to get that varied perspective and diverse
and that's important. Don't live in that little bubble, because you're always going to hear the same thing.
The same thing, And I think that's something that maybe some advice for our farmers is like, start following, and social media is an example, that's a quick win. Start following other people outside of agriculture, even if you love sports. Like, go follow some of the sports personalities so you can get to see how they hear and think and talk
and other business leaders or, you know, authors maybe you've come across. Like,
dare we say politicians? You know, follow people from follow people from other sectors so we can start seeing how they think and feel and what their days look like, so we can start applying what you're saying, like about being positive and optimistic. I mean, I have to ask the obvious though, what scares you the most about Canadian food and agriculture, where we're going? You gotta be really honest.
For me, dairy, it's, you know, the concessions that we have,
the trade deals
up with different trade deals. That makes me a little nervous. Often I see, you know, the government saying, okay, but don't worry, we've got your back. But then they kind of bring in some other kind of rule or regulation that kind of shows me, but do you, you know? So that's probably what makes me worried is, and we don't usually know about those things until it kind of happens. It's one of those external forces that's you can't control, but it has a major influence on your business. So but I think that I usually feel more positive about everything.
Do you think that divisiveness, even within our own sector about supply management, as an example, is one of those areas that we have to work on as a sector? That if we're going to promote united or a unified kind of Canadian food system out to the consumer, especially because your communications marketing background, that we then have to be pretty united behind the scenes to be supportive of one another, of what each of us is doing.
Yeah. I mean, sure, everybody's going to have their own opinion and viewpoint and perspective, you know, based on their experiences, you know, and that's totally valid.
Yeah.
But yes, if we want to accomplish something bigger, then yeah, we're going to have to be a little bit more collaborative.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that we're not necessarily.
Yeah.
There just might be some instances or pockets or something where they aren't.
Yeah. Where we can talk about trade and supply management in the same breath and not.
Yeah. Or different sectors, maybe kind of understanding or appreciating more what other ones are doing. I mean, as someone from Quebec, you know, I might get a lot of flack for being a Quebecer and, you know, in dairy when, you know, there's so many other hundreds of millions of acres of cash crop out west, let's say, you know.
Yeah.
So being curious about what other people are doing, that would be helpful.
Maybe that'd be a good start for some people who are listening, even just on social media. Go follow a cash cropper from out west and follow a dairy farmer, you know, April Stewart from Quebec.
Yeah.
So you can get those varied perspectives on.
Because, I mean, in the end, again, business is business. So you know what? You can share those pieces, even if you're not doing the same thing. You're, you know, corn farmer and dairy farmer.
Yeah.
You're still running agricultural businesses and there's still stuff to share and learn from each other.
Yeah. I mean, to wrap up, because I feel like you and I could talk for hours, but what advice are you going to give to your daughter? So you're hoping that she's going to be a seventh generation and, you know, when she comes to you and has that conversation one day where she either says to you, you know, Mom, I want to be a dairy farmer too, or Mom, you know, I don't think I want a dairy farm.
Yeah.
What advice are you going to give her?
Yeah, either way, I would, you know, help her do whichever thing she wants to do, whatever her passion will be. I think at this point it's leaning towards farming.
Okay.
She made her first cattle purchase
good for her
at
good
9
for
years
her.
old. So
was that what sale was that at?
Well, she bought it from my farm to my husband's farm.
Amazing.
So
okay.
It was
amazing.
But it was a paid transaction and she negotiated the price and everything.
Good for her.
Yeah. So yeah, geez, what would I tell her? Oh, so many things. I mean, there's so many things that I do tell her now. You know, from a woman's perspective, from a woman in agriculture, you know, I just want to support her and encourage her and teach her to just use her voice. And
it sounds like you're a role model in that way to your own daughter,
because you are
showing her how you use your own voice by doing all the things you're doing to support your way of life and what you're doing with your business.
Yeah,
and really appreciate that. That very varied and diverse perspective, April. Yeah. Well, appreciate the conversation today. Again, you and I could talk for hours, but just even about supply management, you and I could go have a whole conversation and communications and marketing, of course, too. But really, really thankful to be here today and have the chat.
That was great. Thanks.
Awesome. Thanks. That's a wrap on this episode of the Country Guide podcast. Go to country-guide.ca for more great content to spark a conversation and subscribe to the weekly newsletter to be notified when our next podcast episode is available.